Welcome to Invictus Games Radio. I'm PJ Kwong. The Invictus Games Toronto 2017 take place September 23rd to 30th and will harness the power of sport to inspire the recovery of wounded, ill, and injured servicemen and women. This podcast shines a light on the stories of those competing in the games and those surrounding them. Their spirit is unconquered. On today's episode of Invictus Games Radio, I am delighted to welcome a 10-year reservist. She's going to talk to us about her experience in the military, her experience in the Invictus Games as an Invictus Games Toronto 2017 hopeful for Team Canada. If you want to follow her on social media, her Twitter handle is at Invictus Scanlon, and I am delighted to welcome Kelly Scanlon. Thank you for talking to me.
Well, thanks very much for having me. It's going to be interesting.
I hope so. I know so, actually. So, Kelly, I want you to take me back. I know that you have been in the reserves for 10 years, and you're still a young person. So that means in 2007, you said that you were a 16-year-old. What made you join the Canadian Armed Forces Reserves? Did I say that right?
Yep.
Hey, look at me saying stuff right. Okay. Take me back to your life as a 16-year-old. What made you decide to join the reserves?
Well, I actually made the decision originally, I think, to join when I was 14. I can still remember the day that I went to a festival that was close to my home, and they had a recruiter there, and kind of just popping into his booth and chatting with him a bit about the reserves and the Army. And it honestly wasn't something I'd ever considered as a possibility, something I'd ever considered before. But my family's a big uniform family. My parents are both police officers. My sister is now a police officer, and lots of cousins and uncles who are firefighters and military personnel. So I think I was inspired by that idea of wanting to do something a little different. And I didn't want to do what other 16-year-olds were doing. I didn't want to work in a shop. I didn't want to work in a restaurant. I wanted to do something that I guess in my mind was going to be important, was going to have the potential to change the world. And so when I turned 16, it was actually one of the first things I did was start filling out all the paperwork to join.
And your parents would have had to sign off with you as a 16-year-old.
Yeah, so to join the Army or to join the Reserves at 16, you have to have parental consent. So my parents would have had to give their signature and say, yeah, like we're okay with this.
And did you have some kind like family conversations about what it was that you wanted to do at that time? Do you remember?
I don't really remember. I don't think we talked too much about it, mostly just because my parents were really supportive of the decision. I think they were really glad that I was getting into something like the Army instead of other shenanigans that teenagers get into.
Yeah,
partying and drugs and taking the car without asking permission, all that kind of crazy stuff. So I'm sure we must have sat down and talked about it, but I don't think I got a lot of resistance from them.
When you're looking at your life now, no longer as a teenager, obviously, what kinds of things did you feel would be included in that important work category? What kinds of things did you feel might be in your future as far as doing important work and maybe changing the world?
I'm not gonna lie. Like I sit back, I'm 26 now, it's 10 years later, and I sit back and I try and think sometimes about who 16-year-old Kelly was, who that brand new recruit to the Army was, and I realize now that I don't know her at all. I don't remember her at all. I can't remember what idea I had in my head. I can't remember why I thought this was the way it was going to be. I guess just because the Army's known on this international scale to get involved in things like this. But I learned within a couple of years being in the Army that it's never that simple. It's not as easy as when you're 16 and you're looking to make your mark on the world. It's not as easy as you think it was.
It never is. From 16, your view of the world is still quite small.
Yeah.
You haven't been on the planet long enough. So you finished high school, and then you mentioned to me that you did some PR work before actually going into training. What kinds of things were you involved in terms of trying to encourage other young people to follow down this same path?
The task that we're doing wasn't anything special. It was just the Army's out involved in a lot of public affair events. I worked in the recruiting area for a while, so when people would come into my unit, just chatting with them or for the younger people who were interested in joining their parents about what it was like and what the training was like and what the reserves was like. And then other things was just stuff around Toronto, events around Toronto. We went to like the Honda Indy is an event we do, the CNE, the sports show. These are all events that the Army does, like a big display. So I was just one of the people that when they brought someone in to do it, I was just got the chance.
Did you have a view to the kind of work that you wanted to do or the kind of unit that you wanted to be involved with?
I'll admit, when I first joined the Army, I really didn't know exactly what I was getting into. I guess I kind of had it in my head that you joined the Army and that they looked at what you were good at and then they gave you your job. That's okay. Not actually how it works. How it works is that when you join, you pick a trade. So like you pick if you want to get trained as a medic, you pick if you want to get trained as an infantry soldier, or if you're smart enough as a pilot. So I can still remember the day being in the recruiting office and talking to him and him being like, okay, so what do you want to do? And I'm 16, I'm keen. I'm just like, oh, I want to join the Army. And he's like, okay, well, like, yeah, you want to join the Army. That's good. What trade do you want to be? And I'm sitting here confused, just being like, the Army. I just want to join the Army.
Because, you know, honestly, my perception as a non-military person is that it's just a great big, huge, bunch of humanity, and that I wouldn't have known necessarily that people are allowed to sort of pick an area of interest for themselves.
Yeah, the way it works, or at least the way it worked when I joined, was you come in, you do all the paperwork, and then you actually do a written test, and based on your score, they kind of lay out these jobs, and like, these are the jobs you scored high enough for. So the higher you score, the more jobs you have. I don't know exactly how my score was. The way really we ended up doing it for me with the reserves is because I didn't really know what I was walking into. I can still remember the recruiter. He's like, okay. He's like, you want to join the Army? He's like, where do you live? And I'm like, oh, I live in Mississauga. He's like, welcome to the infantry, because that was the closest unit to me. There was an infantry unit in Mississauga, my regiment, the Toronto Scottish Regiment, and they had the 75th Company, which is who I ended up with, and I've been with them for 10 years. And that's really how it happened. It was just, who are you closest to? This is what you're going to go and do. So I ended up becoming an infantry soldier, which looking back on it now, I probably would have picked something different.
What would you have picked?
If I'd been smart enough, pilot's the obvious answer. Like everyone wants to get to fly the jets. But I think medic would have been an interesting job, or intelligence. There's so many jobs in the Army, like people don't even realize how many different options you have, and they all open up so many different possibilities to you. So I think if you had asked me over the course of my career, I probably would have picked different things at different times.
And as a reservist, is it the same kind of training? Because once you finish high school, and you were in the fall after your high school graduation, you said that you went into training. Is that the same training that is for I don't know, enlisted personnel, is that the way I would say?
For the regular force. So people
regular
do
forces,
it
thank you.
Full-time. The way the reserves and the regular force works is that the reserves, because it's part-time work and it's based or it's directed more around, we'll say students, the training is scheduled around a school year. So during the school year, so during like September to June, they really only do trainings in like on the weekends or in the evenings.
Okay.
And then during the summer, they'll do full-time training. They'll actually send people away to bases. So I actually did it when I joined. When I was 16, I joined as part of a high school co-op program, and so I actually earned high school credits for doing my basic training with the Army. And then I graduated high school, and I was still in the Army at this time, and it was 3 months later that I began my pre-deployment training to go to Afghanistan. They do it that before a group, before they call it a ROTO, so I was part of ROTO 9, before a ROTO goes or a task force goes to Afghanistan, they'll train specifically for Afghanistan for, it really depends. For some people, they train for months and months at a time, so I ended up training from September all the way up until April. Other people, they only need a month or two. It really depends on the position you're in, it depends on the job you're given, so it varies person to person, but specifically for reservists, they like to try and give you more training because the reserves learn all the same things that the regular force members do. The difference is we don't get as much time on it. Because of the way the scheduling is, we get a lot less time to become familiar with the weapons or familiar with the tactics, or sometimes we'll be learning stuff after the Reich Force because they were the ones who got to see it first and test it out, and then it comes down to us. So for a reservist, your pre-deployment training tends to be longer because they want to make sure that you and the regular force guys you are deploying with to Afghanistan are at the same level or as close as possible.
And are you integrated once you arrive in Afghanistan? Is it regular forces and reservists side by side?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like there's a bunch of reservists over here and the regular forces are over here. You guys end up working together.
Yeah, they integrate you as best as possible. So mm-hmm. they'll even integrate you before you go over. And so you'll have Reich Force guys who have had reservists added in to augment them. There were a few units that were specifically just reservists, and then a few that I'm sure, just based on the way they fell, only ended up being Reich Force guys. But in general, the whole tour is integrated as best as possible.
So I want you to give me one or two things, if you can remember from your training, that were Afghanistan specific that you weren't expecting.
Weren't expecting.
Like, what about coping with the elements?
So it's funny, I think to practice for that, what we ended up doing on my pre-deployment training is they actually took us down to California for 2 months. They have a base down there, I believe it's Fort Irwin, that their whole training area is set up to look and feel like Afghanistan or Iraq. They have villages built there. They have people who have worked for them as interpreters overseas that they bring in as role players. So you have people that are speaking the languages. You have towns that are built to look like towns in Afghanistan or Iraq. So we got to go and kind of try and live in this atmosphere. Climate-wise, it didn't really work out. We actually ended up there during the rainy season. So it just poured rain a lot of the time that we were there. But when it came to environment, when it came to like the mountains and the sand and the kind of the way the villages were set up, that's one of the ways we trained to prepare for that.
And did you find, as an infantry soldier that your focus in your training would have been different from, let's say, somebody else's training? Or is it just generalized at first to get everybody organized for going on a mission to Afghanistan?
There's a little bit of both. There's training that everybody receives. So no matter what trade you are, everyone receives first aid training, for example. And they will take out guys who become specialists and have higher levels of training. But overall, everyone receives the same first aid training. And they give everyone a really basic overview of the tactics and the ideas of how a tour is going to work and the way things will work. But then you will break off and start doing things that are more specific to the job you have been assigned to go overseas. So I actually ended up switching jobs right before I went over, but when I was on pre-deployment, I was training as part of a force protection whose job is mostly like convoy protection. So we did a lot of convoy-specific training, driving convoys through the base, practicing what would happen if we had a breakdown, or practicing what would happen if we were attacked, or if there was an IED hit, and how to set up the defenses and how to get a vehicle and get a crew out of there. So we did a lot of focused training on things like that, where you'll have other jobs who are focused on other things.
So I've heard from all of the Invictus family people with whom I've spoken that this is a wonderful time to sort of create that bond, that the comrades in arms sort of feeling that starts with training. Did you find that experience for you?
I found it with some people. I ended up getting moved into another unit not long before we ended up going overseas. So the people I ended up in Afghanistan with were not the people I trained with.
Yep.
I had people that I was very close with, guys that we did the drives home together. Right? There was one guy in particular, Robin. He drove me home from Pet every time we went home and back. And
Petawawa,
yes.
There we go.
And he's always been like a great, great friend of mine. I was stuck with him, and I had some of the girls I shared a room with, Aisha, who was a very close friend of mine. So yeah, you do end up developing those bonds that last from your training, past tour, and all the way till now.
You became injured.
Yes.
So you had a training accident, and that resulted in an injury. and it took some time to get you sort of sorted out. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had a really simple train accident just during PT or during physical training one day, and it wasn't uncommon. It wasn't anything weird or strange. There was no interesting story to it. It was just
an injury.
Yeah, it's just an injury, which is very common in the military. It's a tough life.
It's tough work.
Yep. So what ended up happening with me was I was injured and ended up going and seeing a doctor for it. And I got told originally that it would be fine, stay off it for a week or two, and it'll all heal up and there'll be no problems. Unfortunately, it didn't work out to be that way. There was damage there that was permanent, but we just didn't really realize it at the time. And so as I went on and on with my training, it got worse. Like, it never got better. I kept seeing the doctors over and over again to try and figure out what was going on, and never really got the clear answer. And
how long a period of time was that?
That covered probably most of my pre-deployment training. So I'd say it went, I was injured in October, so fairly early on in the training. And I ended up seeing doctors through October, November, December, probably into January. And when, by the time January hit and we really didn't have an answer, and I was starting, people were starting to kind of talk and be like, what is this that she keeps saying she's injured and doctors can't figure out what it is? You have to remember too, I was 18 at the time, and I wanted to go and serve. As a reservist, you basically compete to go overseas. It's not a guaranteed thing. So I started just shutting up about it and just going on with the training and ignoring the pain that was there, because I wasn't getting an answer. I didn't think we'd get an answer, and I wanted to do this. So I just stopped worrying about it and just kind of suffered in silence and let it go on from there.
If there was advice that you could give to somebody who was in pain right now, physical pain, what would you recommend to them?
That's the thing. If I could go back and I could talk to myself then, I don't know what I would have told myself differently, because doctors had told me that if they had known before my tour what my injury was, I wouldn't have ended up going.
Okay.
And it's really weird to kind of argue whether or not I would have given up going on tour, even knowing that everything that came after it, all the negativity that came out of it for me, it's still one of these experiences that changed my life. And I don't know if I could give it up, but I do it now with a lot of the younger soldiers. When they get injured, I talk to them. I'm like, if you are legitimate, like if you're actually injured, this isn't just you're sore, seek help for it. Don't let anyone tell you to shut up about it. Don't leave it alone. If that doctor's not giving you an answer, go and find a doctor or a physiotherapist or anybody who will give you an actual answer, because I got injured when I was 18 and it completely set my life off course for years and years and years. And it's really daunting when you sit there and you kind of realize that I'm 18, I'm young, I'm supposed to be at the prime of my life, and you're already damaged the way people are when they're 40, 50, 60. And when you're going in, and you've become so damaged that they have to do surgeries, and the doctors are telling you that you're guaranteed for arthritis young, you're guaranteed for basically pain and injury for the rest of your life, you realize like you've set yourself on this really harsh path and you can't go back and fix it. Like, once it's done, it's done. So for the guys who actually like are injured early on and can catch it early on, do what you can to fix it, because life's a long time.
Well, the good news is, and we're going to get to the good news part of the story, is that I kind of believe that had you not been injured, we wouldn't necessarily be talking today. So it had a way of pointing you in the direction towards Invictus Games, towards actually getting help. So it's that old story, perhaps, of having to hit that rock bottom. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that rock bottom, because I've talked to other people who were in chronic pain, and that can impact your mental health. And those invisible injuries are kind of difficult to deal with. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I absolutely do think that the way my physical health was contributed, because when I came home from Afghanistan, I ended up struggling with mental health issues. I was diagnosed with a major depressive disorder, anxiety. They said I was suffering from a post-traumatic stress injury. And so when you have all of that that you're dealing with, and at the same time you're in pain, there's no good part going on. Like, you feel bad mentally, you feel bad physically. And I absolutely believe the two of them contributed to each other, because while I was fighting with these mental health issues, I was also fighting to try and get better, to try and heal. And that wasn't going the way I wanted, and kind of suffering through all of that. So that contributes. Like, you don't feel better mentally because you don't feel good physically. And then they always said that the worse you feel mentally, like, sometimes you'll feel aches and pains that are unexplained. In this case, I think they just made the aches and pains I had worse. Because there were times that doctors were like, it shouldn't, like, hurt as much as it's hurting. And I wonder, like, I'm not a doctor, I don't know, but I wonder now, looking back, how much of that had to do with the fact that my mental health and my mind wasn't on track either.
Were you aware of the fact that you were struggling with mental health issues?
I realized it pretty early on. I'll say it probably took me about a year to really figure out what was happening. Because that first year when you come home after tour...
And you're how old now when you first came home? 19?
So I was 19. 19. I turned 20 a few months later. So this is all around age 19, 20. And that first year that you're home is really a lot of reintegrating yourself, kind of trying to fit yourself back into the puzzle that's life. And you're really focusing on that. I don't think, depending on each other, for me at least, I don't think I was so much focusing on mental health or looking back on my tour. I was more looking at finding my place home again. But after a year, when you finally are kind of settled back in, you kind of regain your footing, you stop getting introduced as like, oh, this is Kelly, she just came home from Afghanistan, or people stop asking you questions about Afghanistan, and now you're back to real life, basically, is when you start to sit back and think about all these things and remember all these things that at the time didn't really register for you as strange or odd. But then you sit back and you really start to think about it, and you see that it was such a weird life that you had been living, such a strange circumstance you found yourself in. So after about a year, I noticed that I was waking up miserable and going to sleep miserable, even though there was nothing wrong. Like, you would have thought my dog had died with the way I was feeling, but there was nothing there. And people would ask you, they'd be like, what's wrong? And there'd be no answer. You're like, nothing. Like, nothing's wrong, but you still feel miserable. And it started off just being a day here or there, and then it started becoming a few days in a row, and then a week, and then a few weeks. And at the same time, I was having trouble sleeping. I started having nightmares. And so it was around this time that, like, I knew something was not right. When you're feeling something and have no explanation for why, like, they give you all the training before you go see, like, talking to you about signs and symptoms of mental health issues and what you might be looking for, you kind of take that step back and realize something's not right here. So I think I probably noticed it before anybody else. Like, you know yourself, you know your own mind before anybody else knows. I think for a lot of people, it's just whether or not they admit it to themselves. Because I knew before the Army knew, I knew before my parents knew that there was something not right.
You know what's so interesting too, and being in the armed forces, I mean, there are no fitter people on the planet. And I mean, they have to be very mentally tough, resilient, all the rest of it. So I sometimes wonder, and I've talked to other members of the armed forces who had a difficult time seeking help. Was it difficult for you?
Yes and no. When I knew something was wrong, you have to understand too, it's also a little easier for me because of my physical injuries, I was in and out of doctor's offices all the time in those early days. And so it was easy for me to kind of go in and talk to somebody, or they have you fill out forms when you go in, asking you questions about your mental health, asking about how your sleep has been, and asking you about drug use or alcohol use or nightmares or flashbacks. So you fill out these forms and they look at them, and based on your answers, they kind of assess as you go on where you're at. So I was in and out of these doctor's offices and filling out these forms. And I hit a day where, because I knew something was wrong and I knew I needed help, I answered honestly. And immediately, like the same day, I got pulled in by a doctor, and they were kind of asking you questions, asking you about it. And they asked me, like, why I thought I was in there. And I pretty much said, like, I answered wrong on your test of are you okay or not. And so that got me started seeing, like, they sent me to see a doctor and they sent me to try and get help. But when it comes to actually seeking help, I think you can go and you can see a doctor, but you have to be ready to accept the help. And I think that's what took me so long, is I went and sought help. I went and found a doctor. I talked to the people you're supposed to talk to, but I wasn't actually ready to engage in that healing process. So for the longest time, I think I was really resistant to actually making things happen and actually getting better.
So when you're getting sort of your recovery, you're in the recovery process and you're getting help, were you trying to find activities like the Invictus Games? Were you trying to find things to sort of make use of your time? Tell me about your life at that time.
Yep. So I wouldn't say I was seeking out something specifically like Invictus, but I absolutely had it that some people lock themselves away and don't get involved in anything. I pretty much did the opposite. I tried to fill my time with as many things as possible so I didn't have to focus on what was going wrong, so I didn't have to think about what was going wrong. So I joined everything. I volunteered places, I started fundraisers, I headed committees, I ran all kinds of different stuff. I got involved in all kinds of different stuff. I traveled a ton in those early days, everywhere I could, basically trying to find something that would fix me, something that would put me back on track, something that would kind of be that light bulb of, oh, okay, like, this is what I need to restart my life again. And it just never, nothing ever stuck. And I was just looking and looking again to fill this space in my life, to fill this hole, and nothing ever worked. So I got involved in all different kinds of stuff. I did a bike ride with Wounded Warriors Canada. They did their battlefield ride, which I went and participated in. I got involved in my unit's mess committee and ran that for several years. I volunteered with St. John Ambulance. I did fundraisers for Wounded Warriors. I did all kinds of things, just trying to
And this
fill
is while you
gaps.
Were depressed.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I and I'm sure there are other people. This is why when I talk to people now about mental health stuff, I tell everyone gets told you're looking for someone who's sad all the time, you're looking for someone who stops doing things and stops getting involved. And I try and adjust that. I said, no. I said, what you're looking for is a major change in someone's life. And sometimes a big change is just a big change. Someone has that epiphany. But I think you're looking for people who suddenly are acting not themselves. And it can be...
In whatever way.
Yeah. And it can be good or bad. Because I had it. I had perfect attendance rate at work. Like, never missed a day. In fact, I showed up to things I wasn't even assigned for. I got involved in everything at work. I got commendations and great performance reviews all during this time that you're struggling. And you do it all to try and fill your life up with good things. And you tell yourself, like, oh, like, there's so much good going on. There's no reason why I should be depressed. There's no reason why I should be feeling this way. But you still do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you just hit a point where, I don't know, I guess I was just trying to be like, well, if my life can't be happy, I'll at least make it interesting.
Such an interesting way to say things, honestly. Tell me about the turning point. Well, just in terms of your recovery, you're doing all these different things to try and find something. At a certain point, as you start to recover and as you start to settle, clearly all the busyness must have gone away a little bit, or what changed? Mm-hmm.
No, I stayed busy pretty much the whole time. The one thing that was happening, so I had like all this good stuff I was involved into, but the one thing I think that people definitely saw, because I hid so much of the depression and the numbness, like the fact that you can't connect, that you're not connecting with people. The one thing though I think that people saw a lot of was the anger. Like at that time, you're angry about everything. You're mad at everyone. You're mad at the army. You're mad at the government. You're mad at citizens and people in other countries and
the grocery clerk. Everybody.
Yeah. Yep. You're especially angry at yourself, and you're not even really sure why. At that time, like I found conflict everywhere, even when there probably wasn't any.
And were you an angry person before, or was this a change for you?
This was a change for me, for sure. And so I think part of my turning point was I was angry for years and years and years. And you kind of hit a moment where you just sit back and you realize being angry got me nowhere. It did nothing for me. It just brought more and more negativity into your life. So I worked on trying to not be angry. It's not perfect. Like, it definitely kept going. But you kind of just get tired. You get tired of being angry all the time. You get tired of the fight. So I started just instead just kind of going numb to life. And this is where, when you're saying like the activities must have slowed down, is I definitely started taking step back from things that I'd been involved in for so long, because I was realizing like I wasn't getting what I wanted out of it. But the real turning point in healing, so I'd say like that made things a little quieter for me, but it didn't make me better. The real point in getting better was when I actually started training for Invictus. Like, that was a legit, I can say I saw change then.
Was there a moment where somebody recommended it to you? Did you just hear about it through Soldier On? How did it happen for you?
I actually heard about it through a friend. So another soldier, Sean, who I had done the Wounded Warriors ride with a few years ago, he just put it up on Facebook one day that he was signing up for the Invictus Games. And he put up the link being like, you can sign up here. And I admit, I'd never really heard of the games before, wasn't really sure what it was or what was going on. Kind of talked to him a bit about it, and he pushed me. He's like, you gotta sign up. He's like, we'll do training together, like we'll push each other, and if we end up on the team together, like we'll be training buddies. So I ended up signing up, and you don't find out for a while whether or not you've been selected to try and be on Team Canada. Like, there's months between the sign up and really hearing anything back. But you're sitting here thinking about the fact that I was not a competitive person. I did sports when I was young. Like, my parents always made sure we stayed active, but I'd never competed in anything, never done anything like this. So I'm sitting here thinking like, oh man, I gotta work out. I gotta get going. Cause if I do get picked for this team and I do poorly, I'm going to basically shame all of Canada. It was can't do really bad in your own country, in your own town. So I started training. I chose originally my sport was going to be cycling. So I started riding a bike. I went and I joined a cycling club. And those first couple months were not easy. Mm-hmm. It's hard to motivate yourself. It's hard to get yourself out, especially when you're depressed. And it was hard enough going and doing things like working out. Some people love it, but in the early days when you're kind of just getting into it, it's not fun. You don't enjoy it.
I want to take names. Who are those people?
Yeah. Yeah, whoever they are, I want some of that motivation.
That's right.
So it was hard the first couple of months, but I just kept kind of thinking about the idea of, oh God, like what if I actually ever do end up like in front of all these people? I want to show some effort. So I kept going and I kept doing training, and the cycling club midweek that I signed up for in Mississauga, they found out what I was doing, they found out why I was doing it, and people there started pushing me, started motivating me, started texting me and being like, you're coming to training, right? You're coming to do things. You start to get involved with people who you become accountable to them. They know what you're doing, they know what your goal is, and they're a lot more willing to push you about it than you're willing to push yourself. So suddenly you have people being like, you're coming to training, right? Did you work out today? Did you go for a bike ride? Let's go for a bike ride. And I got lucky enough that a lot of them live close to me already. So it was over these couple months that at first things still sucked and I didn't feel any better. And I honestly went into Invictus not expecting anything. I thought it would be the same as every other thing I'd ever gotten involved in, that it would just be an interesting part of my life, an interesting story down the road that, again, if I couldn't be happy, it'd at least be interesting. And then a couple months into it, you start to notice changes. You start to notice that you are sleeping better. You start to notice that for me, I really struggled with, and suddenly we're getting easier. And I can still remember like the ride that I did, and I still remember like fighting my way up this hill and getting to the top when before I'd really, really struggled with it, and kind of sitting back and be like, okay, like there are changes here. There's stuff I'm starting to see. So that was definitely a turning point for me in kind of realizing that there was more to this than everything else I'd done.
So interesting with Team Rubicon, but tell me what else you're doing.
So here's here's the other major thing. So Rubicon has been a big deal for me, and I think Rubicon will be a great place for people looking for that new mission, that new team. But Invictus, no matter where I end up on September 23rd when the opening ceremonies come, Invictus for me has absolutely been a success story. And the reason I say that is before I went on tour, I had all kinds of ideas about where I was going to go once I got home and what I was going to do. And when I came home injured and when I was struggling through mental health issues, all of those things either faded away, they disappeared. I couldn't see them in my future anymore. And like I said, my family's a uniform family, so I had been thinking for years about becoming a police officer or about trying to become a firefighter or a paramedic in one of these jobs. And for years, doctors said, when I brought it up again, they were just like, that's not a realistic goal. Like, that's not something that's ever going to happen for you. And you basically just need to accept that you're going to be limited in life. And as a 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old, that's a hard hit.
Yeah, who wants to hear that?
Yeah. But what Invictus did for me, which was amazing, is after I started noticing changes, after I noticed I started feeling better, after I noticed things start to go right for the first time in a long time, my town, Milton, where I live now, opened up its hiring for firefighters. And I kind of looked at this and I sat back and wondered, like, should I bother? Could I do it? Should I try? And decided, like, let's go for it. Let's see what happens. Put in the application, ended up doing the testing. When the physical test came around, like, I was really worried about that because that's where one of my struggles had been for a long time. And passed it, like, not amazingly, but a lot better than I guess I thought I would. And I ended up getting an interview and ended up getting hired. And now I'm one of Milton's newest firefighter recruits, and I love it. It's an absolutely amazing job. Like, everyone there is awesome. And again, it's a new mission and a new team, but it's also that new direction in life, something that I've been told I kind of should just leave behind that wasn't going to happen. And like I said, no matter what, I have to thank Invictus for that. Like, they didn't do the work. Like, I had to do it. I had to work hard. I had to get myself to this place, but training for Invictus and Invictus giving me that motivation is what showed me I could do it. And now I have this future in front of me that for years and years and years, I just thought wasn't going to happen, wasn't going to be a thing.
And here we are. To represent Canada, what does that mean?
I'm not even sure. Like, Canada, I've traveled all over the world now. I've visited lots of different countries and lived other places, but at the end of the day, Canada is home to me. And I'll never be one of these crazy people that's like, oh, it's like the greatest country in the world, because I think that's the ultimate arrogance for anyone to claim that one place is the most amazing. But Canada, I think we as a country have it figured out. We're not perfect, but I think we're really ahead of the curve in the way that we're a place where a lot of the time people can be who they are rather than what they are. You see out in the world so much the labels that come with everything and the way people look at each other and don't bother looking at the person. And again, not that that never happens here, but I think a lot of people here are actually dedicated to us living a life like that, where people get the chance to be who they are and not the label that gets assigned to them. And I love that. I love wearing the maple leaf and representing a country where people really are just free to be who they are. The laws are there and the laws are moving forward to support that. And that's what I love about it. And that's what I love representing. I love representing this country where you can come here and see every part of the world, every idea, every notion kind of put forward here and find its place.
As someone part of the Canadian Armed Forces, tell me three qualities about being part of that Canadian contingent that makes you proud. Proud as a reservist. What are three Canadian qualities of being part of the Canadian military that have made you proud?
We like skip over this question.
Sure. Let me just look. Okay, no problem. Okay, my next question, because I would say that, and I'll cut all of this out, but the fact that you are so tenacious, the fact that you are so grounded, those are all like amazing kind of qualities that I see in you that perhaps other military organizations have or don't have, but for you, that's what I see. But don't sweat it, my friend. We will move on. My next question has to do with, please tell me about Kelly Scanlon today.
Kelly Scanlon today is a million miles to the left of okay. where Kelly Scanlon a year ago or 2 years ago thought that she would be.
Okay. What are you involved in?
So here's the differences. Here's the changes that you can already see that Invictus made in my life. So after, there are a couple major ones, that major things that I've gotten involved with over the years that are, or over the last year, that are actually real to me now. And one of the first ones was after I started realizing that I was capable, that I could still do things, that I could still, I guess, serve a purpose, I ended up joining an organization called Team Rubicon. And what Team Rubicon is, it's an international organization that is a disaster response group, but all the members who get recruited are veterans or first responders. And they deploy people all over the world to answer these disaster responses. And I saw them working in Fort McMurray after the wildfires and kind of took a look at them and realized that maybe the Army didn't have to be the only place that you found purpose or that you could make a change in the world. That here were a group of people taking the best parts of the Army, the best parts of the military, and going out, and they didn't have to use military might, but they were changing people's lives. They were helping them. They were using the skills that the military had given them to make a difference. So I ended up joining up with them. It was actually a lot easier than I thought it would. And automatically, you have this amazing group of people, soldiers and firefighters and police officers and doctors and nurses, all gathered together, who are really all dedicated to this one mission of finding a new purpose, because a lot of them, just like me, had struggles or had injuries and were trying to find a way to fix that. And then they wanted to help. They wanted to be useful again. That was the one thing the Army gave you, is you felt like you had a purpose. You felt like you had a mission. And Team Rubicon gave me a mission back, now still going out and still affecting the world, affecting these people's lives. So they ended up actually sending me in September down to Louisiana to do flood disaster response. And for the first time, I felt like I was starting to wake up, because I started actually being able to connect with this mission and believe in this organization, when before I wasn't really sure I could believe in them or get behind what was going on. And as soon as I came home, they contacted me and were basically looking to invite people in to help them set up this new branch of Team Canada. And because I actually connected with this mission, I jumped right on it. So I became one of the volunteer leaders, and me and a bunch of other veterans and firefighters and police officers are all working together to launch the Canadian division of Team Rubicon. And it's been amazing. We've gotten to send people all over the world. We sent people to Haiti, we sent people to Nepal, down to the States a few times after Hurricane Matthew, just helping people and having like a purpose again and a drive again. And this is a group that I actually believe in, because we took, or they took, the good parts of the military, left behind some of the bad stuff, and built this amazing new team with it.
In the spirit of helping, so this is my last question, aren't you relieved you made all the way through it? Good for you! My last question is this, which is, if somebody's sitting at home and they're listening to this podcast and they find the fact that you've been able to overcome all of these obstacles and continue to try and be on the road to recovery and rehabilitation, if somebody is at the start of that, is there one thing that you could suggest to them that might help them?
Everyone's going to find their own way. They're all going to be unique in what gets them over that mountain, because I've started to really look at mental health issues like a mountain. Some people, their mountain's really steep and the climb is really hard. And some people, it's gradual and suddenly they find themselves lost at the top in a storm. And I think a lot of people hit that point. They get to the top of their Everest and they get lost in the storm and they don't know how to get down. And the one thing that I would say is that there is a way down. There is another side. Like, there's a way out of the storm. You just have to figure out what it is for you and then take it. Because for so long, I think people, I don't know whether they become afraid or whether you become comfortable, whether you just tell yourself that there's no future, that there's nothing to fix, that it's always going to be this way, that you just don't bother moving forward. And I think everyone can move forward. You just have to find what works for you. And for me, like, physical activity, sport has played a huge role in that because of Invictus. And what I would say for all of them is, if you haven't tried it yet, do it. The first couple months will suck. Again, the first little while sucks. And maybe it isn't what makes you better, but what have you got to lose? Some body fat? Like, there's nothing bad that comes out of it. So just go and try it. If it works, awesome. If it doesn't work, keep searching, because there's a million and one ways, a million and one organizations, like Team Rubicon or Wound Wars or Soldier On or stuff all over the world. Like, I know guys who use art, I know guys who use guitar, I know guys who, they've got service dogs or therapy works for them. You just got to find what it is that works for you and then do it. Because at the end of the day, you can get handed every kind of help you want, but it's up to you. It's in your hands to make it happen.
Do you know what's so remarkable about this conversation? When we started, one of the things that you said is when you were 16 years old, 14 years old, in fact, you wanted to find yourself doing important work and helping to change the world. And you know what? You are. So thank you so much for talking to me, Kelly Scanlon. You are a treat.
Thank you. I hope it was. I hope it was interesting.
Very interesting for sure. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks for listening to Invictus Games Radio. For more information, visit www.invictusgames2017.com.